You're listening to LGRadio.online. Welcome to In the Benny Green Archives.
Good afternoon. Today is the annual celebration I usually indulge in on behalf of a very elusive character indeed. A man about whose reputation there clings precious few hard facts, and yet who somehow manages to rouse our curiosity. Almost as though if we did know more about him, it would all be riotous stuff. But we can't even be sure when George White was born. His real name was White, by the way, but he blancoed that into White at a very early age. Some record books say he was born in the 1880s. King Cole's encyclopedia gives it as circa 1888. But it does seem likely that he was actually hatched in June 1890. Originally a tap dancer who worked in the Ziegfeld Follies, George seems to have got what ideas he ever had from the Follies. And in June 1919, he opened his own version, which he called George White Scandals. He even borrowed Ziegfeld's leading lady, Anne Pennington, to star. He also starred himself, wrote the book, and produced it. The show ran a few months, which was no more than he intended, and it very soon became an annual event. But considering how much he put onto the stage, George White didn't cause many great songs to happen. Fortunately for his reputation, he was the first impresario to give George Gershwin a real chance. Actually, it was Gershwin's idea. Hearing that White was in Detroit, thinking over what had gone wrong with the 1919 scandals, George took the first train there and told White that what had gone wrong was the fact that there hadn't been any Gershwin songs in the show. White agreed. He had had differences of opinion with the 1919 composer Richard Whiting, so he now gave Gershwin his big chance. But having given him his chance, he didn't see why he should give him money as well. So George started writing for White at $50 a week. In all, he wrote five annual editions of the George White Scandals, and he gave White many bargains, including this.
All you preachers who delight in panning the dancing teachers, let me tell you there are a lot of features of the dance that carry you through.
Sarah Vaughan with the big Gershwin hit of the 1922 edition of the George White Scandals. The lyricist in that scandal, by the way, was Buddy De Silva, but listed in some reference works as co-lyricist is Ira Gershwin. The confusion is caused by the fact that the three of them worked on an old Gershwin song called A New Step Every Day. In that very early work, there was a line, A Staircase to Paradise, which De Silva suggested should be changed to Stairway. But something much more important came out of the 1922 scandals, and it's one example among many of the odd way that George White had of being in the wings when great events were taking place. One of the star performers of the 1922 scandals was Paul Whiteman, and it was because of that that George Gershwin became friendly with him. Inevitably, as the years went by, and with them the additions of the scandals, Gershwin's fame rapidly outgrew the operations of George White, not only his fame, but his price. By 1924, when he turned in his fifth score for White, Gershwin was just about the hottest potato on Broadway, and he had absolutely no pangs of conscience in dumping White once he felt he was ready. In a sense, 1924 was Gershwin's year. The year of the unveiling of the Rhapsody, the year of his departure from George White and his ascent to a position where he could virtually choose his producer, the year he wrote his first full-scale show with his brother Ira. There was a swan song for George White that became a big hit of the 1924 scandals, another example of George's partnership with Buddy De Silva. Now, looking back at this particular song, we can see that it featured a device that George Gershwin was especially fond of and used several times, a kind of modulating movement which comes in this song in the 15th to 18th bars, where the words go, "Who can she be, worries me?" Later on, Gershwin was to borrow the device from himself when writing the song They All Laugh. Well, this was the way George White and his backers first heard it.
Somebody loves me, I wonder who, I wonder who he can be.
Somebody Loves Me. Gershwin was one of the very few standard songwriters to perceive that the approval of jazz musicians for his songs was the very highest praise, because the jazz musician's livelihood is based on the harmonic ingenuity of the material, and Gershwin knew they were saluting those harmonies. Now, that chord change that comes just before the halfway stage of Somebody Loves Me is an ideal example of the kind of thing that can give a jazz solo a bit of a lift. And it turns up in identical form in a delicious song written for a 20s show called Tiptoes, which, surprise, surprise, was about a dancer, Tiptoes K, who tries to hook a glue millionaire and makes it stick, as the saying goes, when she finds she really does love him in spite of the glue. Not much of a literary work, but yet again, the songs made the evening pass painlessly. And one of them had this device whereby the song takes off in a different direction in its 13th bar by gently changing key.
I am just a little girl who's looking for a little boy, who's looking for a girl to love. tell me please, where can he be? The loving he would bring to me and the harmony I'm dreaming of. It would be goodbye, I know, to my tale of woe, if he said hello. So I am just a little girl who's looking for a little boy, who's looking for a girl to love. I am just a little girl, and I'm looking for a little boy who's looking for a girl to love. Tell me, please, where can he be? All the loving he would bring to me, and the harmony I'm dreaming of. It would be goodbye, I know, to my tale of woe, if the man would up and say hello. So I am just a little girl who's looking for a little boy, who's looking for a girl to love. Yes, I'm searching, standing on the corner here, 12th and Main, trying to find a little boy who needs a little girl to love.
Looking for a Boy, written by the Gershwin Brothers, whose association with George White now drew to a sudden close. But White went on with his annual reviews for many more years. In 1925, he had much to do with the grafting of the partnership of De Silva, Henderson and Brown. And in the following year, that was the team that brought home the bacon for him. Now, this 1926 edition had a record run of over 400 performances. And when you look down the list of songs, you can see why. De Silva and his buddies came up with the dance craze, The Black Bottom. But they also managed another song which I always think should go to the credit of Henderson alone. You see, Ray Henderson was the musical part of the trio, and it was the musical aspect of this song that had all the merit. The lyrics were, and still remain, an embarrassment to anybody over the age of one. 1 month, that is. Lou Brown, well, he had an excuse. After all, he was born in Odessa, which is not the best place to be born in when contemplating a career in literature, or indeed in anything. But De Silva had no alibis at all. No wonder he went on to become president of Paramount Pictures. And it's not so surprising that the trio should have perpetrated this song. Remember, we're dealing here with the same team that was to come up soon with Sonny Boy, maybe the most idiotic song of the 1920s. In the biopic dedicated to De Silva, Henderson and Brown, it was claimed that they only wrote Sonny Boy as a joke to send up Jolson, and were horrified when Jolson took it seriously. But that's Hollywood's story. At any rate, nobody's ever suggested that the lyric of this next song wasn't meant seriously. As a matter of fact, people never question it at all, which seems astonishing to me. What a load of nonsense. Wedded to quite an ingenious melodic structure.
Oh, they say some people long ago were looking for a different tune, one that they could croon as only they can. They only had the rhythm, so they started swaying to and fro. They didn't know just what to use, but this is how the blues really began. This is the way the blues began. Oh, 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 oh. At least this is what Ray Charles told me. They heard the breeze through the trees singing weird melodies, and they named that just the start of the blues. Then from a jail there came a wail, from a downhearted frail, and they played that as a part of the blues. Now from a whippoorwill sitting high on a hill, they grabbed a new note. Man, they pushed it through a horn till it was worn into a blue note. You better believe me, they nursed it and they rehearsed it, and then they gave out the news that the Southland really gave birth to the blues. From a whippoorwill high on a hill, they grabbed a new note, and baby, pushed it through a horn till it was worn into a blue. That was a gas. I hate to be a bore. Could we take it, Morty, from number 57? And then they nursed it. They rehearsed it. When they were ready, they gave out the news that the Southland gave birth to the blues. Don't you know that they nursed, rehearsed, and gave out the news?
The song was rousing the drunks and the Black Bottom was tiring them out. George White must have been on top of the world. A successful show on Broadway, and what's more, a show featuring dozens of White's favourite commodity, the commodity which he was famous for, good-looking dames. But to get to know him any better, it's no use looking into the manuals of musical comedy, because they tell us nothing. You can occasionally get a glimpse of him as he moves through the thickets of other men's lives. One of these other men, a great friend, was the sports writer and Broadway short story writer Damon Runyon. And it's in a Runyon biography that we find George White turning up at Lindy's restaurant to raise some money. The man he asked for the money is the big-time gangster Arnold Rothstein. And just to give you some idea how tight this whole world was, how closely the underworld and the elite, as Al Dubin once put it, really were, there is a story of Rothstein's sense of humour. Well, he was a bear with a very small brain, so I suppose you have to forgive him. But it seems that he could impersonate the voice of all people, the petite Lillian Lorraine, leading lady for Ziegfeld and George White. So one day, Rothstein telephones Lindy's restaurant and pretends to be Miss Lorraine and orders a lunchtime snack. 6 dozen sandwiches, caviar with pickles, and 12 quarts of milk. Well, meanwhile, George White went on being what he'd always been, a purveyor of amusing songs and ladies wearing a big friendly smile. Two of these ladies turn up in Runyon's short stories, Clarabelle Cobb and Miss Hortense Hathaway, who Runyon says, quote, has only to walk around Georgie White's stage with a few light bandages on, and everyone considers her very beautiful, especially from the neck down, unquote. Well, that sort of thing went on again in 1927 and again in 1928, but then there was a break. Wall Street crashed, and so did a lot of people. And not till 1931 did the scandals return.
Life is just a bowl of cherries. Don't make it serious. Life's too mysterious. You work, You save your worries so, but you can't take your dough when you go, when you go. Keep repeating it's the berries, the strongest oak must fall. The sweet things in life to you were just loaned, so how can you lose what you never owned? Life is just a bowl of cherries, so why not laugh at it all?
Life is Just a Bowl of Cherries from the 1931 George White Scandals. In the following year, for no reason that anybody knows, he suddenly changed the title to George White's Music Hall Varieties, starring Burt Lahr and Eleanor Powell. This one ran about 5 minutes, but it's interesting for two reasons. First, because in The Life of Burt Lahr, written by his son, we get our closest look at George White, who apparently was arrogant, a desperate gambler on his own shows, and a man who believed in the old-fashioned method of putting a group of writers in a room and encouraging them to stay there till they had a show. When he did that with Henderson, De Silva and Brown in 1930, the trio stayed in this room for 3 weeks, and at the end of it, when White asked them to show what they'd done, all they could give him was the title, Flying High. 3 weeks, three men, and all they had done was two words. But somehow White persuaded them to keep trying, and in the end, Flying High was a success. The only possible explanation for White's crazy optimism is that he was a Hungarian. Anyway, Flying High was successful enough without having any songs in it that really mattered. Getting back to the Music Hall review, Burt Lahr was astonished at the way White kept wanting to fight everybody, how he wanted to have romances with all the chorus girls and not let anybody else talk to any of them, how he kept on with his vendettas for years and years, how he tried to goad Rudy Valley into a fist fight, how he conducted his life generally. For instance, Georgie used to cheat at golf by cutting holes in the pockets of his plus fours so they could drop hidden golf balls in places where they were easier to get onto the green. When invited to society weekend parties, he would arrive with a crate of his own tin tomato soup. But the good songs still happened, almost by accident. Here's the second reason for our being interested in the Music Hall variety.
No more company to feed,
no more papers left to read. What's to do about it? Let's put out the lights and go to sleep. No more anything to drink.
Leave those dishes in the sink.
Gladly. What's to do about it? Simply nighty-night and so to sleep. You're waiting now for me to say I love you more and more and more, dear.
You're looking younger every day.
Really?
You never were so sweet before, dear.
No more money in the bank.
No cute baby we can spank.
What's to do about it? Let's put out the lights and go to sleep. What's to do about it? Let's put out the lights and go to sleep. To do about it, let's put out the lights and go to sleep.
You're waiting now for me to say I love you more and more and more, dear.
You're looking younger every day. You never were so sweet before, dear. No more money in the bank.
No cute baby we can spank.
What's to do about it? Let's turn out the lights and then go to sleep.
Let's Put Out the Lights, written by that very lucky man, Herman Hupfeld, the one who once wrote a flop tune in 1931 and then, through no efforts of his own, suddenly found himself rich when this flop tune was shoved into the movie of Casablanca 9 years later and Hupfeld suddenly became the distinguished composer of As Time Goes By. As for George White, time really was going by. His bit players were becoming film stars. The scandals ended, but then there was a sort of swan song in 1935 when White played the part of George White in a picture called Guess What? George White Scandals, which had a plot all about how George White finds stars for his stage show, George White Scandals. And that was that, really. There was one more edition of the Scandals in 39 and one more movie. But by the time Georgie died in 68, he was very much a relic of a lost age. Today we remember only a few songs and a few anecdotes in the books about other men. And yet back there in the 1920s, he was quite an important man, at least by his own reckoning. I suppose you could call him one of those men who loom very small. One last thing. You might think that his recipe for cheating at golf wasn't enough to win games. What about the other fella's shots? Well, Georgie had an answer for that too. He used to tread on the other fella's golf ball till it was buried in the turf and lost forever. Good sport was Georgie. Now, June the 9th, 1891 was an important day for popular songwriting, and I can justify that remark merely by playing this.
If a custom tailored vet asks me out for something wet, when the vet begins to pet, I cry hooray. But I'm always true to you, darling, in my fashion. Yes, I'm always true to you, darling, in my way. I've been asked to have a meal by a big tycoon in steel. If the meal includes a deal, accept I may. But I'm always true to you, darling, in my fashion. Yes, I'm always true to you, darling, in my way. There's an oil man known as Tex, who is keen to give me checks. And his checks, I fear, means that Tex is here to stay. But I'm always true to you, darling, in my fashion. Yes, I'm always true to you, darling, in my way. From Ohio, Mr. Thorne calls me up from night till morn. Mr. Thorne wants cornered corn, and that ain't hay. But I'm always true to you, darling, in my fashion. Yes, I'm always true to you, darling, in my way. From Milwaukee, Mr. Fritz often dines me at the Ritz. Mr. Fritz invented Schlitz, and Schlitz must pay. But I'm always true to you, darling, in my fashion. Yes, I'm always true to you, darling, in my way. Mr. Harris Plutocrat wants to give my cheek a pat. If the Harris pat means a Paris hat, baby. But I'm always true to you, darling, in my fashion. Yes, I'm always true to you, darling, in my way.
One of the great songs from the greatest show ever written by Cole Porter, Kiss Me, Kate. That one must have been a real treat for Porter after all the daft plots he'd spent his time on for the previous 15 years. But it never seemed to affect the songs, which were always intelligent, sophisticated and witty. In fact, just the kind of stuff to put the librettist to shame. One of the ironies about Porter is that he never understood what jazz music was and really hated it when musicians started improvising on his songs. In this regard, he was just as bigoted as Jerome Kern and Richard Rodgers, and not within a million miles of the enlightenment of George Gershwin. But the irony is that his songs can be an absolute joy to play in the style he hated so much. Recently, Rosie Clooney, surviving all the vicissitudes of her life, even a dreadful movie about the vicissitudes of her life, which I reckon must have been the biggest vicissitude of all, made an album of Porter songs. And just listen how the supporting musicians start to move on one of the great American ballads.
In the still of the night, as I gaze from my window at the moon in its flight, my thoughts all stray to you. In the still of the night, while the world is in slumber, oh, the times without number, darling, when I say to you, do you love me as I love you? Are you my life to be, my dream come true? Or will this dream of mine fade out of sight, like the moon growing dim on the rim of the hill, in the chill still of the night?
Song from the 1937 picture Rosalie, and among the musicians so obviously enjoying themselves and each other there were Warren Vache on trumpet and Scott Hamilton tenor saxophone. Now, Cole Porter wrote so many songs which have become part of the past we remember and the present we breathe, that his lesser items can hit you with the shock of surprise. It always used to amaze me, for instance, that he could have bothered with Don't Fence Me In, even as a joke. But it sometimes amazes me just as much when a song as good as this next one is never, ever heard anymore.
I am dejected. I am depressed. Yet resurrected. And sailing the crest. Why this elation mixed with deflation? What explanation? I am in love. Such conflicting questions ride around in my brain. Should I order cyanide or order champagne? Oh, what is this sudden jolt? I feel like a frightened colt just hit by a thunderbolt. I am in love. I knew the odds danced me before. I had no flair for flaming desire, but since the gods gave me you to adore, I may lose, but I refuse to fight the fire. So come and enlighten my days and never depart. You only can brighten the blaze that burns in my heart. For I am wildly in love with you, and so in need of a stampede of love. For I am wildly in love with you, and so in need of a stampede of love, and so in need of a stampede of love.
Song that was originally meant to be the first act curtain of the show Can Can, but which for some reason was dropped at the last minute. During the 1970s, I compiled, or helped to compile, two Cole Porter stage shows, and in neither of them did I manage to persuade the powers to be that another Porter song, called After You, was worth inclusion. The rejection was based on the fact that the song was obscure. But that was its attraction, that the obscurity was its virtue. Every show ought to have a few surprises that the management intended. You always get the ones they don't, but that's quite different. After You was written for Astaire back in the 1930s and was really quite a striking song. And when I played a recording of it recently on this programme, lots of people wrote it asking where it had been all these years. Well, the answer is just lying there. Well, there is one more songwriter we ought to make a note of this week, born June the 14th, 1929. First piano recital at Carnegie Hall in 1935, which makes him all of 6 years old. Well, after that, he seems to have taken his time a bit, and it wasn't until 1952 that he came up with what I suppose we should call his first standard. Imagine that, not managing it till he was all of 23.
I'm sentimental, so I walk in the rain. I've got some habits even I can't explain. Could start for the corner, turn up way in Spain. But why try to change me now? I sit and daydream, I've got daydreams galore. Cigarette ashes, there they go on the floor. I go away weekends, leave my keys in the door. But why try to change me now? Why can't I be more conventional? People talk, people stare, so I try. But that's not for me, 'cause I just can't see my kind of crazy world go passing me by. So let people wonder, let them laugh, let them frown. Oh, you know I'll love you till the moon's upside down. Don't you remember I was always your clown? Why try to change me now? I'm too far gone, and it's too
now. Why Try to Change Me Now? Cy Coleman. The words to that one were by Joseph Allen McCarthy, but the lyric writer most closely associated with Coleman was the late Carolyn Lee, who once did the unpardonable thing and somehow managed to make it pardonable. She took a title that had already been used for a standard song and wrote something even better than the original. Hoagie Carmichael and Johnny Mercer used it first time around, but this is what Coleman and Lee did when they borrowed the title but nothing else. I like the idea of finishing this recital with this recording because the song and the performance seem to me quite perfect.
How little we know, how much to discover, what chemical forces flow from lover to lover, how little we understand what touches off a tingle. That sudden explosion when two tingles intermingle. Who cares to define what chemistry this is? Who cares with your lips on mine how ignorant bliss is? So long as you kiss me, shatters, how little it matters, how little we know.
How Little We Know, written by Cy Coleman and Carolyn Lee. And that's it. See you same time next week.
Who cares to define what chemistry this is? Who cares with your lips on mine how ignorant bliss is? So long as you kiss me and the world around us shatters. Matters, how little we know, how little we know, how little we know.
You've been listening to In the Benny Green Archives here on lgradio.online. Please do visit the website to find out when the next episode is on, along with all our other shows. This is lgradio.online. Thanks for listening.